This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. You can learn a whole lot more online at cvilletomorrow.org, and he joins us each week to talk a little growth, development, and local politics and campaigns. How are you, sir?
Doing well, Coy.
Are you dressed up because you have a meeting to go to, or is this just a...
Why did I get dressed up today?
Because you don't always wear a tie.
I'm going to reception after the show. The county schools are having a retirement reception for our employees.
Oh, nice.
So that's where I'm going next. But then I also met with some Monticello High School students this morning and wanted to dress up for them, too.
What were they doing?
They were, I tell you, it's great. This is, we've got some good government instruction going on. These students do what's called a citizen action project. And this is sort of like after they finish their AP exams or SOLs or whatever, before the end of the school year, this is another major project they work on. And these students pick a topic that they want to interview local officials and maybe national officials and come to some understanding about it. And then they may decide to advocate for a position on a certain topic. You, I know, are aware of the group that did this with the water plan.
Yeah.
And that was another group of students from Monticello High School, and they had a forum on the water plan.
Yeah, that was wonderful.
So that was one. I've never seen that done before. They brought officials and concerned citizens to the school and had them all talk about a big public policy debate in this community. But we've had students talk about this group today was talking about lowering the drinking age. They wanted to know if what I thought about that from 21 to 18.
Back to 18.
Right. And what would be the implications for a school board if that was done?
What'd you say? Because a lot of people, like, you know, there's that whole movement of university presidents who are joining together.
The Amethyst Initiative.
Yeah, to bring it back to 18.
That's right.
It was 18 when we were kids.
Not where I lived in Georgia when I was growing up.
Oh, really?
It was not. I just missed it. So it's always been.
But we were grandfathered in, weren't we?
I was not.
Oh, I was. Because I remember at William & Mary, my freshman year in 1984, you could buy a keg and put it on the freshman hall.
Yeah?
Yeah. And it really wasn't a big deal. I'm actually not.
Wait a minute.
I'm not wholly opposed.
Wait a minute.
What?
In 1984, in August, I was starting at UVA. And we couldn't do that.
We were grandfathered in.
No, we weren't.
Yeah, yeah. I swear. I was grandfathered in. The law did change, but we were grandfathered in. I could still buy beer and kegs. Totally. Nobody told you.
They must have had different laws down in Williamsburg.
It was a state law. That doesn't make any sense. Because I know I was going to buy. I know I would. I went to buy it because I didn't.
Now that
it was
I
a big deal because I didn't drink in high school, so it was a big deal. And I remember when I got to college, I had my first beer.
All I can say is the University of Virginia that same year, that was not the law.
I'm sure it wasn't dry, though.
Anyway, but the students were, raised a lot of good points. And the big message I tell all of them is to get involved in local government. And, I hope they sign up for Charlottesville Tomorrow and get involved in their community, wherever they go to school, and get involved, get feedback. And call elected officials. And I point out to them, I said, you can pick up the phone and call any of your local elected officials.
That's the beauty of local government.
You'll probably get them on the phone.
Yeah.
And you can talk to them. So they were very engaging.
Good job. That's a good thing. I admire that. So what's going on? What's the latest?
Well, since I left the studio.
And we got a winner for those Heart tickets, by the way. Congratulations to Shelley. So come get your tickets, Shelley. You're going to see Heart.
Since I left the studio, candidates have just been coming out of the woodwork.
There's a whole mess of them, isn't there?
And to the point where I need to announce publicly, if you're a candidate thinking about running, please give me some advance notice so I can plan my schedule. We had four candidates make announcements of some sort in the past week. Two for city council, two for the Board of Supervisors.
Wow.
So I'll start with the city. Bob Fenwick is a longtime resident and a member of the McIntyre Park Preservation Committee. So he is involved in all things McIntyre Park on both sides.
Did
of
you
McIntyre
see where
Park.
The APVA put McIntyre Park on its list of the most endangered historic sites in
Virginia?
I
saw that headline, yep.
That's big news. I don't know exactly what it means, but I know the APVA is quite influential. They own Jamestown, for gosh sakes.
And a number of the activists, and we'll talk about this later in the show on the Meadow Creek Parkway, a number of the activists opposed to the parkway right now are trying to document those historic resources and make that case that the road is going to impact those resources. But Bob Fenwick announced his campaign and said that his campaign would be, quote, a referendum on the Meadow Creek Parkway.
Ooh, like no car tax.
And it's not, typically when we cover a candidate's announcement, you don't hear these words. This will be my first and last campaign for public office.
Is that what he said?
That's what he said. And he said he's a political novice, but he's just been motivated to the point on this on all issues, McIntyre Park, so whether it's the YMCA, softball, which he's heavily involved in, or the road, that has pushed him over the edge.
So he really knows McIntyre Park.
He does.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, and I'm not endorsing him, but sometimes those kind of folks make the greatest candidates and the greatest local servants in local government, because they're not there for a career. They're there just because they care about some issues.
And a funny thing, in his letter announcing his campaign, he put at the bottom of it, his contact information and then occupation. And he listed four different things as his occupation. Community organizer was number one, which I
like
thought,
our president.
Like our president.
Barack
community
Obama.
Organizer.
Yep.
Construction contractor. I think that's where he actually makes the money day by day. Writer. And then internet webmaster was his fourth occupation. And to prove that he's been busy on the fourth occupation, he named in his campaign announcement 5 different websites that he's launched related to the campaign. So Mr. Fenwick is out there buying up URLs, the website addresses that represent the issues he cares about. So he's got SaveMcIntyrePark.com, StopTheParkway.com, DemandJobs.net, economic development and jobs are another one of his planks. RavannaDam.com, where he's going to talk about the water supply. And then, of course, VoteBob.net.
Of course.
So the websites are proliferating. Mr. Fenwick's information is going to be getting out there. He said he's going to be busy getting the 125 signatures. He needs those signatures because he's running as an independent.
Not as a Democrat or Republican.
Right. And the Democrats already picked their two candidates, Kristen Zekas, the challenger, and Dave Norris, current mayor, running for reelection. So in addition, we had Andrew Williams. He was the only one I knew about last time I was on the show.
Is that the student, the PVCC
22-year-old student and State Farm insurance employee. And he announced his campaign in front of City Hall.
Good for him.
Had several of his friends there. We filmed the whole thing. Actually, we filmed both of these candidates launching. You can see those on SeavilleTomorrow.org. And just look for any of the city council race stories. But he said he's going to run a grassroots campaign. You know, he's young and has not had a lot of exposure to some of the issues that have been a concern of city government. So we were asking him questions, for example, about the water supply. And he said, basically at this point in the campaign, you know, for an independent, it's early because they've got till November to get their campaign together and start their strategy. But you have to get on the ballot by June 9th. But he's got some work to do. He said he wants to listen to voters and develop his positions on the issues further. No independent has won election to city council.
Well, that was what I was going to ask
for
that.
The past 40 years.
Oh, my gosh. Are you serious?
That's what Jeannie Cox, the clerk of city council, told us.
Oh, Jeannie would know.
And
man,
Williams, though, you know, he's confident. He's like, I think I can overcome that.
Yeah. Well, and, more power to him. I think it's great.
He happens to be African-American. So it's interesting to see a young male African-American running it and getting engaged like that.
Yeah,
so
it's fantastic.
I applaud that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's great. And it's tough, obviously, and some might say impossible. It hadn't been done in 40 years, but doesn't mean it can't happen this year to see an independent win city council in Charlottesville.
And Mr. Fenwick's other main priority, he said, was creating jobs and turning around the local economy. One of the things he outlined, in fact, he outlined this before he even ran, before he even announced his campaign, was that he encouraged city council to release all of their rainy day fund to just basically drain it and start hiring people to do fix-up jobs around the city, fixing up infrastructure, repairing buildings. And
how much is that rainy day fund in the first place?
Well, I did not look that up, and I don't see it mentioned in his statement here.
It was like $40.
But he calculated that it would be enough to hire 41 men and women, citizens of Charlottesville, to put them to work. And it just sort of reminded me of the Civilian Conservation Corps back from FDR's days and putting people to work in the Depression.
Employees are expensive, though, because you got to pay them every year. Yep. Is he just saying that
he said it'd be short term?
Oh, I see.
These would not be, you'd not be guaranteed a job, but it'd be a job to get you out of the fix you're in right now and also help the city.
Interesting. Two new candidates for Charlottesville City Council. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow. There's also two in the county.
So just when I caught my breath from covering the city candidates, I did some phone calling and found out that we had two Republicans running for the Samuel Miller seat on the Board of Supervisors.
Wow,
that seat today is held by Sally Thomas, who's retiring at the end of 2009. And we already have a Democratic nominee in Madison Cummings, former school board member. We already have an independent candidate in John Lowry. So now this is shaping up to be at least a three-way race to fill Sally Thomas's seat. The two people are Dr. Philip Melita and Dwayne Snow. The interesting thing about this is they're both neighbors of very important people.
What do you mean?
Dr. Melita is the neighbor of Bob Tucker, the current county executive.
Okay.
Dwayne Snow is the next-door neighbor of Sally Thomas.
You're kidding.
I didn't know that. I don't make this stuff up.
How about that?
So I guess they've both been living next door to these people so long. It's
something
just
in the water.
It's just rubbed off on them that they need to investigate.
That's awesome.
Local
and they're
politics.
Republicans.
They are Republicans.
Good. I like a race.
So now, as far as that goes, we will have a contested race in the Rio District between a Republican and a Democrat. Democrat is David Slutsky, the current chair of the Board of Supervisors, running for re-election. And Rodney Thomas, former member of the County Planning Commission, running for office as a Republican. So that's a contested race for the two parties.
Right.
Samuel Miller will be contested by both parties and an independent. Jack Jewett, however, it appears at the moment that, and of course I said this last week, that
you never know.
I never know. So, but right at this moment, Dennis Rooker is running unopposed with $60,000+ in his bank account, waiting for an opponent.
Wow. See, this is good, though. You got some races, you get some candidates,
we
you
do.
Have some options.
We are guaranteed.
That's good.
It's good
for democracy.
And it's good for Charlottesville tomorrow. We will now have contested races in the county and the city. It means we can do our voter guides, we can have our candidate forums, and we can make sure the public is informed about where these candidates stand on land use, transportation, growth and development, all those quality issues.
When does that come
issues.
Out, your big voter guide?
And pie. We need to find out where they stand on pie.
Yeah, their favorite pie. Put that question on there, will you?
I will. What is your favorite pie?
That'd be great, pie? your favorite pie.
Done.
Yeah.
The voter guide will come out in October.
Oh, so right before the election.
Yep.
Good deal. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at sevilletomorrow.org.
Let me say a few things more about these candidates
in
the county, because we didn't really introduce them too much. But Dr. Melita is a human resources expert. That's what his training is in. He's currently an adjunct professor at the University of Virginia, so in the continuing and professional studies program, where he teaches in the human resources field. Used to work at GE Fanuc. Early on when he moved here, and had spent 20 years in GE, and then spent some time actually commuting to Northern Virginia. They basically, he and his wife worked in Northern Virginia, but they came back for the weekends, it sounds like. Both his kids went, two of his boys went through Western Albemarle High School. The daughter, I think, ended up graduating out of Northern Virginia High School. But they've maintained their house here, and now he is retired here, except for his work with the university. Dwayne Snow is a former member of the Architectural Review Board, and he, of course, is the retired owner of Snow's Garden Center. Snow's Garden Center now is run by his sons, Corbin and Jonas, according to the website.
Yep.
But a family business since 1912, according to the website. And Mr. Snow is going to have his announcement tomorrow, 11:30 at the county office building. Charlottesville Tomorrow will, of course, be there to film and podcast that event, but he'll be saying more about his campaign and why he's running tomorrow. We haven't gotten that out of him. Dr. Melita said he was running primarily because of fiscal issues. He's concerned about federal and state government. He feels like is out of control as far as its spending, and he wants to make sure that there's a good fiscal sense here at the local level, and he's concerned about that.
Good.
Any questions for me?
This is going to be a hell of a year, isn't it? I mean, you got the governor's race, lieutenant governor, attorney general, House of Delegates is up, and all these local races. Man, hold on. And, I love this stuff.
And we have big local issues for all these candidates to chew on. Water supply, public education.
Parkway.
Taxes.
Development. Roads.
Roads.
No money for roads.
Regional transportation.
All that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. Lots of good stuff. We're going to continue this conversation in the next half hour. We are talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow. He joins us every week, talking a little growth, development, and a little local politics and campaigns. We'll be back in just a few minutes. This is Charlottesville Right Now.
Anyway.
What else is going on? You want to talk about water?
Yeah. Why not? We always do.
Yeah. Well, the rates are going up. That's what gets me about this thing. I see the point that the folks on both sides make. I really do. And I am sympathetic to both sides. I really do. But at the end of the day, the rates are going through the roof. You know, the rates keep going up and up and up, and they're only going to go up. And that's what concerns me as a rate payer in the county of Albemarle.
Well, your authority, the Albemarle County Service Authority, which is charging you for your water and sewer, had a meeting last week. And so in the middle, we were talking in the first half about all these candidates coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
Then all these meetings started happening about the water supply and dredging and these letters going back and forth and all this intrigue, which, of course, we find endlessly
intriguing.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
And the Albemarle County Service Authority has been reluctant to fully embrace the dredging study of the South Fork Ravanna Reservoir.
Well, especially if it has anything to do with water supply. They love dredging for boating, but if it's dredging for water supply, they don't want to go near that.
And we've talked about that on the show, and where they're coming from is they're saying, we have a water supply plan, we don't need to dredge to support that plan, so why should our ratepayers in the county pay for studies we don't need?
Right.
That's their perspective.
Yeah.
And they basically put that on paper last week and sent a letter. Gary Fern, the director, sent a letter to city council, said, here's where we are.
Right.
We know you want us to embrace this thing, but we can only embrace parts of it.
Right.
So the parts of it they are willing to embrace are the things that get them data that are useful to the water supply plan.
Right.
A bathymetric survey. So studying, you know, the current shape of the reservoir underwater and figuring out how much sediment is there. You know, that's important. They need to figure that out. But the public should be reminded that the reason this is a problem is we built that dam on a major river with a big watershed in 1966. And 1% of the storage volume of that reservoir is lost every year because of dirt washing into the reservoir. And that's because of deforestation going back hundreds of years.
Development.
It's because of recent development. Yeah. But all of that puts sediment into the water. The Meachams, the Mormons, Ivy Creek, it all goes to South Fork, Ravanna Reservoir, and stops right there.
And it fills up.
Starts filling up with mud. And they knew that was going to be a problem early on. But
they didn't dredge it.
But there's not been any maintenance dredging since 1966.
Which means there never was any maintenance dredging.
There's never been any maintenance dredging.
They just built the dam, let it fill up with water, and then they just let it fill in with dirt.
And now they're trying to figure out what to do about that.
Yeah.
And the folks in the city and activists with groups like Citizens for a Sustainable Water Plan have been saying, let's get some real numbers on what dredging would provide us, what it would cost, what are the storage options for, you know, where you put the dirt once you pull it out. And
because their whole point is, when we started talking about dredging years ago, when we were putting the plan together, we didn't have all the information, we didn't have any of the right numbers, we were misled, all this kind of stuff. So therefore, they made the plan that exists is on faulty ground because it doesn't have all the right information vis-a-vis dredging.
Right.
So they're comfortable with revisiting that plan, right?
Yep. So the Albemarle County Service Authority sends this letter to City Council. Then on Monday. Hopefully I'm getting the chronology straight here because Sean Tubbs was the one covering all these meetings for me.
Way to go, Sean.
Thank you, Sean. Then the Ravanna Water and Sewer Authority, they're the wholesaler. So they sell water to the city and to the Albemarle County Service Authority.
Right.
So you don't get a bill from the RWSA. Your provider
bill
gets the bill.
ACSA.
Right.
Yeah.
So the Ravanna Water and Sewer Authority met. And remember, their board has now been expanded. They have two elected officials now sitting on that board. So we have, you know, our picture on our website has Holly Edwards sitting in the hot seat now. She's the city councilor on the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority Board, along with Sally Thomas. Interestingly, Sally Thomas has been in that room for years in the audience. So she is a regular fixture at those meetings.
Right.
Now she's going to be one of the elected officials.
And an outspoken opponent of dredging for water supply.
For water supply.
Yeah, there's a distinction.
So this, so basically the RWSA board was asked, okay, where are we now with this RFP, request for proposals? You'd put out an RFP to get companies to bid on work, right?
Right.
So they're putting out an RFP for all these different dredging studies, bathymetric survey, where can we deposit the stuff? How much capacity will we get back?
What's that first thing you said? The bathymetric survey?
Bathymetric.
That tells you how much dirt you got in there and the shape of the bottom?
Yeah, they put the little sonar buoy, whatever.
That's the first thing you need to do, right? What's it look like down there?
I don't know if it's the first thing, but it's one of the things you have
to do.
Well, you
need a boat.
And it's one of the things you have to do on a regular basis with any reservoir.
Yeah.
That's used in a water supply, apparently. So anyway, the discussion then revolved around two important things at this meeting. How much is, who's going to pay for it, and then some legal advice that they got in closed meeting, that then when they came out of closed meeting, they released the letter to the public that they had received as a board. So I'll come back to that letter in a minute because it's got some important information in it. But the consensus was, the understanding was, okay, the ACSA is not paying for all the dredging studies. They'll just pay for the ones they're interested in. They basically said to city council, you pay for the rest if that's what you want.
And city council said, sure.
And then that evening, city council met and they said, okay, fine.
Yeah.
We'll do it.
Interesting.
Some of the councils...
Even though the RWSA... said the money's there to do this.
Right.
They said... he said that last year.
They set that money aside a while back, like $300,000 to do this study.
Because they're sitting on like $30
million. And they're sitting on money to get ready for the major things they need to do, whether it's sewer or water infrastructure.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow, and Betty is on line one. Speaking of Betty, I think I was speaking for you earlier. Go, share your thoughts. Go right ahead.
Hey, Brian and Coy. First, I want to thank Brian for putting the tapes up of the Albemarle County Service Authority meetings on his website. The last meeting they held on May 14th, really no one knew about.
We got a little flack for that. Let me just clarify that the audio we put up was given to us by the ACSA.
Right.
So that was a meeting.
You were there at the meeting.
Right.
So but you were.
You missed a meeting?
You don't miss
meetings.
We couldn't TiVo that one because there's no way to TiVo
was
that.
It was a public meeting, though?
But they were very, I mean, it's public information. So they were very happy to give us that, but we neglected to source them on that.
Right.
But really, no one knew about this meeting, and I think that this is the problem, partly, that there hasn't been transparency on that board. And I agree with Julian Talafaro. We're both very, very unhappy that the Service Authority will not help pay for these dredging studies, because these studies are going to produce firm data upon which we may save $100 million or more. And that will help ratepayers in the county. That will be incredibly beneficial. On the other hand, the Service Authority has never blinked when Gannett Fleming, the consultants for this water plan, have spent over $5 million on data that we can't use. It's not even usable. And the Service Authority also didn't blink when the Gannett Fleming data for the dam estimate had to be redone, which is happening right now. The city offered to help pay for that. It was over $240,000. They didn't make any complaints about that. They said, okay. And now the Service Authority is telling the city, "We, if you go forward with dredging, and if it saves us lots of money, we'll reimburse you." But it's just absurd to me that the ratepayers of Albemarle County, their rates are going up way higher than city residents. They're the ones we're going to bear the lion's share of the cost of whatever water plan we have, and their own Service Authority won't look at an option costing them as little as $100,000, because they have to do the bathymetric study anyway. So we're talking about $100,000. It's not about money, guys. This isn't about money, and we know it. It's about several members of that board founded Friends of the Mormons River. They don't pay water rates. They don't care what water plan we have as long as it saves, in their quotation marks, the Mormons River. And they don't care what the ratepayers pay. It could be $500 million and they wouldn't care, as long as they get what they consider the pipeline between, it's very complicated. But anyways, as long as they get what's in their backyard, which is the Mormons River, they get all the water they want in that river. They don't care about a water supply plan. They don't care about the best water for Charlottesville coming from the Mormons River. And they really don't pay about the cost.
Betty, thank you for the call and sharing your viewpoint. We appreciate it. You're welcome anytime. There's Betty Mooney on line two. And the lines are open at 977-1070.
Betty has a strong point of view.
Yeah.
I think, you know, to be fair, I think these decision makers care about more than just getting water in the Mormons River.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Betty Mooney, Kevin Lynch, and others came before the Board of Supervisors and challenged them to basically do something about the representation they had on the Albemarle County Service Authority because of the concerns Betty just outlined. The response from the elected officials, Sally Thomas in particular, was she felt like she was very well represented by her appointee on the Albemarle County Service Authority, which is Liz Palmer.
Right.
So
who will be on this program? Liz Palmer is on this program a week from today.
So there are differences of opinion. I do think one of the things to point out with the water supply plan is that there was an effort by the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority, not just Friends of the Mormons River, not just the Nature Conservancy, but lots of different groups, to find a balance between the human needs for an adequate supply of safe, clean drinking water, but also then the environmental needs of this ecosystem and how to restore those stream flows. And the reason the stream flows are a concern in the Mormons River is today that water is diverted to some degree to Ragged Mountain in the city. It's done by an old pipeline from Sugar Hollow Reservoir straight to Ragged Mountain, and that pipeline needs to be repaired or replaced. And that's one of the ways to make it a win-win proposition.
Yeah.
With this water supply plan, we can help the environment by getting stream flows returned to their normal levels. We can capture the water further downstream. And Betty Mooney's point there about the quality is that, yes, if you catch it downstream, but it's going to be more sediment laden water at that point, as opposed to the pristine water coming out of Sugar Hollow.
Yeah.
And
it also affects the stream flows south of the South Fork now. We're sort of moving the bathtub downstream, but you still have the same issue south of the South Fork Dam.
Well, all that water, when we're done with it, though, ends up back in the Ravana. That's not really the issue.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow. Margo's on line one. Margo, you're on with Brian. Go right ahead.
Yes, I have a quick question. Whatever happened to the Buck Mountain Reservoir? And does the county or whoever own that land yet?
That's a great question, Margo. And if I had a nickel for every time I've had that question.
We get that question about every time we talk about water.
You know,
it is a great question because the word hasn't gotten really out sufficiently. You know, a lot of folks are still wondering. I thought they were going to build a new bathtub
that,
up there.
You know, that was the old water supply plan, the one before the last one.
Yeah.
And that was to buy land in Free Union in Albemarle County, build a bigger reservoir there.
A new Sugar Hollow, basically, in a different place.
And, Margo, what they found was, among other things, there was an endangered species, the James River spiny mussel, was found in that habitat. And basically, they were informed under no uncertain terms, but that the federal regulators would never permit a new dam being built that would submerge that watershed and that ecosystem. So because of the endangered species and because of the hurdles to get a new reservoir approved there, they've basically given up on ever having a reservoir there.
Was that land purchased?
It was purchased. They still own it. And
who owns it? City and the county?
I want to say the RWSA. It may be Albemarle County. I don't believe the city's involved in owning that
land. Why can't the RWSA then sell that land for a good price and then put it towards the cost instead of raising the rates?
They're actually using it as a target for mitigation. And by that, I mean when the plan is to build a new dam at Ragged Mountain. If they build a higher dam there, they're going to flood land that's currently, you know, land with trees on it.
A lot of land.
And as they flood that land, they need to show to the regulators that we're going to make up for it somewhere else. So they are taking that property, Margo, at Free Union. They're going to plant a lot of trees there to replace trees lost at Ragged Mountain, and they're going to restore the stream to a more pristine condition along the stretch right there.
I've never understood. Would the James River spiny mussel perish if it was under...
I'm not a biologist.
Never understood that. And I'll tell you this. The amount of money we've spent on this, we could have built a beautiful museum and aquarium for the James River spiny mussel and just stick it in there and then build a new dam up there.
And we've also talked about, Margaret, you may remember Pretty Creek. That was another place that land was bought to build a reservoir. And they ended up buying that land and finding out after the fact that there wasn't enough water running through that area to actually build a dam.
But they still own the land.
Well, they do, and now it's going to become one of Albemarle County's newest parks. So Pretty Creek is up above, God, I'm blanking on the name of the road, but it's up in northern Albemarle County.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're going to make that a new park. So,
and a lot of what they own, actually land they own in Free Union, are people's pastures, horse pastures.
That's right. And one of the challenges they're having is getting permission from some of those landowners, apparently, to get in there and do the work they need to do.
To plant trees and stuff?
Right.
Because some folks might prefer a pasture.
Well, they need to get permission, different easements and access issues. And so they've got to work with the landowners there where they're going to be crossing their property. And I think they have some places where maybe cows and horses are in the river and they need to clean that up.
Margo, thanks for the call. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Have a great night and thanks for listening. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you, Coy.
We're going to break for CBS News, local news and weather. Best Seat in the House starts in just a few minutes. Appreciate you all joining us. Have a great night.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.